Hello, and we are Makes a History with me, Foz, and Ross. Say hello, Ross.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm all right, bruv. How you been? What's been going on? What do you know about what's been going on? And what would you recommend us do in the future?
Oh, well. So, I mean, it's been ages since we've done this, isn't it?
Like, yeah, it's been a while, man. It's been a while, to be fair. Sorry, everyone, it's been a while. We've been very busy. Busy lifestyles.
Busy people.
Jet setting from Paris to Berlin. And every disco I've been in.
I have been looking for love.
It's me too, man. Cracking song, to be fair, though, isn't it? Cracking song. Yeah, so what's been going on?
Yeah, what no, I've been.
Towels have you got?
Oh, I've done interesting stuff. I've been skiing, during a week in the mountains, I went skiing precisely twice, but I did a fucking shit ton of day drinking, and that was
nice. Holiday. That's what skiing's about, though, isn't it? Getting pissed, basically. And then fucking up your knees.
And then I had to go like travelling for work when I got fucking eaten by bed bugs, which was an experience.
Mate, I was so grossed out by that, to be honest. Like, I couldn't convey how grossed out by that. You've seen what they look like when they're all nested up. You're gonna torment yourself if you look into it, mate.
Yeah, my wife looked at it and she's like, I arrived home at like 2 a.m. and she's like, she knew that this had happened. She's like, have you brought that suitcase in the house?
Yeah.
It's like, you're going back down there and taking it outside.
Yeah. yeah, it's bad, mate. It's bad. Can't let them fuckers in.
Yeah, no, that was fucking awful, to be honest. But apart from that, yeah, it's good.
What were they like, the bites?
I woke up, I had like little red dots all over my hands and feet. I was like, okay, well, that's a bit odd. Took some photos. I was like, interesting. Didn't think much of it. Did some work shit. And then I was like flying back the same day. And flights got fucking delayed. So I'm sitting around the airport for hours and my body just started fucking itching. Especially in like the general vicinity of like love handles. And by midday I was like fucking bright red there. And also other fucking more intimate areas. And it just itched like a motherfucker.
I'm so sorry you went through that, bro. Oh, sorry, that's my dog barking. Oh, that might be an issue tonight, to be fair. Normally, I've got a new setup tonight, so we're decorating, obviously. I've talked before, we're going for the house renovations. We're decorating with my computer's temporarily bin. But tonight, because we're decorating that room, I'm down in my living room, so the sound might be a little bit echoey. We've tried editing out already, haven't we? So we'll see how we get on with it. So the dog's down here with me, so we might get barks throughout the day, but he's a beautiful dog. His name's Toby. And he's the biggest, fluffiest chow chow you've ever seen.
I just want to describe your setup for the listeners, because you've got the camera set further away. You're in like a room that's half furnished, half under construction. Mm-hmm. And I would say it puts me in mind of late era Saddam Hussein when he's like, you know, making videos to defy the Western Imperium.
You've got a really plain background. It's just like plain a bare background. White wall.
Scraggly beard, blanket.
It's not scraggly. I've got some length going on. It's pretty scraggly. There's a story behind that, to be fair. So, I went to go and shave. And normally, my routine for shaving is I don't do nothing with it. And when it gets itchy or unmanageable, I shave it right down with the beard trimmer to like the lowest setting. So, there's still like a top, you know, a thick 5 mil stubble, let's say.
Right.
And then I just leave it to grow again. And then when it gets like, sometimes I'd line it up a bit, you know, shape it up and that. But when it gets unmanageable, shape it. So, 10% battery in my bare charger. Go to charge it. Can't find the charger nowhere because we've turned the house upside down, haven't we? During the construction. Cannot find the thing anywhere. But it's paining me too much because I know it's here somewhere to buy a new one.
Yeah.
The second I buy a new one, it'll show up. So it's sort of a protest beard, I suppose, to the winds of fate.
Yeah, that would mean that they win if you bought
fucking
a new
fate. You can't control me. No one can control me. So yeah, that's my story about my beard.
No, it's a good look.
Yeah, thanks, man. So what beer are we drinking then? Talk to me about it.
So I've got the plastic hipster bottle.
Oh, was rocking something special, are we?
Yeah, so this, you remember a while back, we had the one where I bought it and it had gone horribly flat by the time I actually got to
it. Yeah, and it was all, yeah, it was nasty. Yeah, man.
So I think it's the same one as that, but this time it tastes like it's supposed to. And
oh, so you get another try then.
Yeah, and it's pretty nice. It's got like banana-y hints, you know?
Oh, I don't think I'd like that.
It's a little bit fruity, a little bit vanilla-y.
Quite nice. Yeah, what might, but if there's a hint of banana, I hate banana flavoured stuff. To be honest, I'm not a fan of bananas, to be completely honest.
Yeah. I would, like, no, they are the devil's fruit, but...
Yeah, oh, mate, at work, because I work in a fruit processing plant, we've got a banana ripening area where we ripen the bananas. It's an interesting process, but it stinks of bananas in there. Oh my god, it's a bit, I hate going. I don't seem to bother nobody else. I walk in, but I hate it, mate.
You're some sort of like banana vampire.
Oh yeah, maybe that's my weakness. And it's a shame because that's the most common fruit they give away for free at work: bananas.
Not sure. You're literally working for free bananas at the back of the factory.
Yeah, they don't pay me. They pay me bananas, but I don't love bananas, so... I think I might be in a bit of a raw deal here.
Go on, electric monkey. Take the fruit and fuck off. See you tomorrow.
That's what they're going to call me, electric monkey.
What have you won? I see you got a little stubby bottle or something.
Yeah, so I've actually got some French beers.
Ooh, la la.
It's not a common thing you see in the UK. It's not, apart, you know, there isn't any really mainstream French beers we get here, is there? Particularly. But this is a drink that's been in the UK. I remember my granddad drinking these. they're called Brassiere. They're in a small green bottle. It's got the labels like a French flag. But it's Aldi that sell them.
Oh, yeah.
And they come in a big long pack of these little stubby bottles. But they ain't got no weight in them. So they're perfect. Misses in an Aldi shop. You know, times are hard. Cutting back and that, you know.
I'll fucking defend Aldi to the hill. You get some high quality shit.
Not great. I don't like the fruit, fresh produce. But, you know what I mean? I mean, you can get a little rump steak for like... £3.50, you can't argue with that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very cheap by you. Obviously, we've got listeners from all over the globe. To get a steak for £3.50 in a supermarket is incredibly cheap.
Yeah, that's like 100 Czech crowns. That's not, that would be like a decent price in Czech, like. £3, yeah, that's good.
Remember that picture of that massive rib joint I sent you that we had for Valentine's Day? Bear in mind, it was a huge piece of meat. It was about 2 bony and rib joint, 2 inches thick. Like the end of the tomahawk, basically. That was £20. And that was like a good meal for 2 people, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Meat's expensive. Meat's mad expensive. Everything's mad expensive at the moment in the UK. Inflation, bruv. It's getting to me. It's like to piss me off.
Don't worry about it.
But yeah, so I got these little Brassiere beers. Then I'm about to run out, so I've been hitting it hard. As you can, listeners can probably tell, I'm already off cut, to be fair.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one then.
But yeah, so I've got 3 more of them, and then I've got some San Miguel's because they've also worked for us. Mm-hmm. So,
fucking buzzing cheers, mate. Choice. I
suppose we'll talk about some issues for a bit. That's what the podcast's about.
Yeah, alright, let's do that. So,
where did we get to? What did we do previously? And what's coming up in the future?
Yeah, so in the long ago time, last time we recorded, we talked about how, like, you know, Germany's big, bold plan to knock out the Soviet Union in 1941 went fucking tits up.
Yeah, that didn't go well, did it, for them?
That went quite badly. So they come to a situation at the end of 1941 into 1942 where they're now at war with the Soviet Union, who they should have really defeated, the UK, who they don't have a plan to defeat, and the USA, who they just declared war on out of like fucking vibes and good times.
Yeah.
So it's not going great for Germany.
We do know Hitler was YOLOing it by this point, you know.
Literally, yeah.
Well, he was from the start, to be honest.
He was from the start, exactly. But at this point, it's really like they are running on vibes. Mm. And like, you know, I think we said it last time, that for me, the decisive turning point of World War II is 1941. Germany loses the war in that winter when they're about to take Moscow.
Yeah.
Anyway. Close. Yeah, no, closer than thing. But even then.
Russia runs out of Moscow, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's
Moscow's gone, right, it's the end.
That's where the big off button is for Russia. You get inside the Kremlin, you press the off button, and Russia, that's how Russia took Russia off.
You're listening, Ukraine. That's what we need to know.
But, you know, even in the best case, like, even if they did knock out the Soviets, they still didn't have a plan for beating the UK.
No.
Like, so they were still, the vibes were going to run out at some point. So anyway, so we get into this kind of crisis point where it's like, oh shit, all of our options for an easy win are over. Now what do we do? And this is where we're going
to... At this point, I'd like to say, bear in mind that we're with the USA, it's impossible for them to win a naval game now, isn't it? Completely impossible.
Yeah, completely. Like, there was no way they were going to win a naval game anyway.
They thought they could. They had a plan to win it.
They had a plan, which got... Yeah.
The US and... So the two biggest naval powers in the world.
Yeah.
No chance.
Nah. And, like, the industrial output is just... It literally doesn't compare.
Was there any attempt to sue to peace at this point?
Not seriously. Like, I mean, sometimes people talked about it with Hitler, but by the end of 1941, Hitler's locked in. Like, it's fucking ride or die to the end.
Yeah. That's what I've always admired about him.
I appreciate how you timed that for me to finish my swig of beer and be about to start speaking. Thank you. So what we're going to talk about today is how the Nazi regime kind of got real, and we're going to talk about the deadliest architect in history.
The deadliest architect? That's an interesting
one. Yeah, that's a twist. So, you ever heard of a guy called Albert Speer?
Yes.
Okay, what do you know?
You said to me 5 minutes ago, have you heard of a guy called Albert Speer? And I went, no, that's enough. That's all I've heard about him, what you told me. I've heard his name, I know nothing more.
Okay, so I mean, he's like one of the key figures around Hitler. Like, if you watch any of like these documentaries, like Hitler's Circle of Evil or all of these type things, he's always one of your key players.
What's his name again?
Albert Speer. Speer spelled S-P-E-E-R.
Okay. I feel like I'm martyring the name now, but please continue.
I think when we describe it, you'll know who I'm talking about.
Okay.
So he becomes one of Hitler's close confidants in the second half of the war because one of the key figures in the Third Reich. And he's who we're going to look at today because he's really important in keeping Germany in the war. So to give some context for him, he's born in 1905, so he was, late 30s at this stage of the war. And is born in Mannheim, down in southwest Germany, close to France. His family were noted as being unloving and distant. Like, his older brothers bullied him. His parents, like, didn't show any affection or love to him. So, you know, classic happy German childhood.
Mm.
Anyway, he trains as an architect. He goes to, like, technical universities in southwest Germany. And eventually fucks off to Berlin, where in 1931 he joins the Nazi Party. So he joins, you know, in 1931, the Nazis are on the way up, but they're not in power yet. It's not like it's a requirement to, if you want to have a career, to be a Nazi, like, at that point. It's
yeah, he was in the early days. Like, he's a hardcore believer then, isn't he?
Yeah, and this is important, because there's a lot of mythology around Albert Speer as the good Nazi. And, like, oh, no, he didn't believe in it. He wasn't political. He was, like, just a technocrat, and he was just doing his job. It's like... No, he joined the Nazi Party in 1931.
Mm.
And he moved back down to southwest Germany, where he was from. But in the 1932 election, he travelled back up to Berlin to go and campaign. Like, if you're not a committed member of a party, you don't travel the other end of Germany from Mannheim to Berlin.
That's a distance.
Yeah. And, like, you know, you're committed to something. If you're out there on the streets knocking doors and stuff, you're a true believer. Especially if you're doing it at the other end of the country. Like, if you're going up from, like, London to Newcastle. to go knock on doors.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, brother.
So, yeah, though, true believer. But he created this image of himself after the war because he was writing books while he was in prison. And he was made this image that he was completely unpolitical, completely uninterested in Nazi belief. And he kind of maintained that image until he died.
So you're telling me about this image he's created for himself then. So what's the reality, if that's the image? What's the reality of the geezer? Why is he so special?
So he is probably the key factor in keeping Germany going in the second half of the war. And basically...
So by that, do you mean he made lots of good decisions or he kept them falling, not causing peace? Or what's that mean?
Okay. In terms of, if you have like a purely amoral view of like your goal is to keep the Nazi regime going, he achieved that.
Okay.
For a bit. So anyway, so like he started off in this like this political campaigner. And he becomes close to Hitler in the 1930s. He's like becomes Hitler's favoured like designer and architect. He becomes Hitler's like pet architect, basically.
Was he a qualified architect?
Yeah. He's like he went to like technical universities in Karlsruhe and somewhere
for
else.
For architecture.
Like, yeah. So. He was the real deal. And he was designing like, you know, these Nuremberg rallies where like the huge sets and the thousands of people marching. He also designed the venues for the 1936
See,
Olympics.
I thought all that was fucking, what's his face? That little
Goebbels.
Prick. Yeah, I thought he did all that.
Goebbels is the one who translates this into how do we sell it to to an audience.
Ah.
But Speer's the one that's like the set designer. So if you think of it like a play, like Speer's the set designer and Goebbels is the director.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he's designing all these like venues, all these fucking auditoriums. And he designs the venues for the 1936 Olympics, which includes the stadium where Hertha Berlin play today. Was designed Albert Speer. Yeah.
I was going to say, that was quite a notorious Olympics, apparently, as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the showcase. Exactly, the showcase.
Oh, we talked about it, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's why I was repeating some knowledge. I was like, yeah, I was just thinking, where the fuck did I get this knowledge from? You know, I'm saying it. I'm like, where did that come from? I was like, oh, it come from a fucking earlier episode of this.
I'm glad it's sinking in, like.
Fucking, I'm in a paradox of knowledge right now.
But yeah, so Hitler saw him as like, you know, as his kindred spirit. You know, Hitler liked to think of himself as being like arty and intellectual. Like, you know, Hitler loved the opera.
Yeah.
And you look at the other people around him, people like Ernst Röhm and stuff, and they're all like fucking street fighting thugs.
Yeah.
They're not really Hitler sort of people on like a personal level, whereas Speer, this like architect and designer, this is more like Hitler sort of guy.
You know who Hitler reminds me of quite a lot? You know, Kingpin out of Spider-Man, the big fat badder.
No, because I've never actually seen... I've only ever seen the Spider-Man with fucking...
No, but like when was Willem a kid, Dafoe. The cartoon. The cartoon.
Yeah, never seen it.
Kid, I mean,
seen
it. He's in... what's he in now? He's in Daredevil. He's in the Daredevil series on Netflix.
Also, no.
Oh, man, you're missing out.
I've got no cultural references, I'm sorry.
He's a prick anyway.
For the audience, which like are more culturally aware than me, it's like Kingpin.
Yeah. He's just a prick, isn't he? You know what I mean? Like Kingpin, the character, lives a lavish lifestyle.
Okay.
Super lavish lifestyle, but he's like the main man of all the crime in the city.
Right.
So that's his. You know what I mean? Like, there's all that fucking. What I'm saying is Hitler's living this lavish lifestyle. And he's like, looks the fine things in life, like cocaine and opera and those things. But yeah, he's got thugs on the street beating up people.
Yeah. And those are the people he's around day to day. Yeah.
They're his voters.
those are his guys, but like he on a personal level probably would be kind of disgusted by them.
Mm. Fucking madness. Just full of hypocrisy, isn't it? Well, it's one of those. You can't. Like we always say, you can't relate logic to any of him fucking these decisions.
No. So Hitler takes him and he appoints him as the building inspector Berlin to give him like an official capacity aside from being Hitler's mate. And the two of them sit down in like long evenings and they design together Hitler's dream capital city for when he conquers all of Europe, which is gonna basically demolish most of Berlin and build a new city called Germania. And everything's on like a fucking ridiculous like Warhammer 40k scale. Like
what? Okay.
Or like if it had ever been built, it'd be like the biggest buildings that have ever been built everywhere. And like wow. Berlin's on top of a marsh, so it would be like deeply fucked. But yeah. So he wanted to like build this capital city. Obviously, none of this ever happened. But the important thing was he gave Speer a government position that reports directly to Hitler as inspector of buildings.
I think there's a lot of things like that got uncovered, isn't there? Like these massive plans for things that never got done, but it was planned to be done. Like the whole TV series, Nazi mega structures.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now that comes into mind. It sounds like a ridiculous title for a series, but it's mad because these are real plans.
I think on that, there was a thing that they had on one episode, which was like, Speer had built like test foundations to test how like in the swampy ground these big foundations would have to work.
Wow.
And that's as far as it got, like. So anyway, so how we link him to our story, so our bigger story of the German economy, is in 1942 he becomes the armaments minister. So he moves from being, again, we move from being a building designer and like set designer to armaments minister in the middle of a war. Because fucking everything is vibes.
To be fair though, as an engineer, I can imagine him being able to suss that out. And I'm saying that because I'm an engineer. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like the engineer's good with logistics as well. You know what I mean? It's a similar thing, isn't it?
Yeah, there's some like logical thinking and stuff in there. There's some connections.
It's like you and me, isn't it? You're the project manager, I'm the engineer. Mate, we could be unstoppable. Maybe we start a history project about engineering. We've got it all covered.
You just engineer all of the history to be delivered into ear holes.
And then we'll manage it very well as a project.
We got this sorted.
Yeah, so I carry on. I'll put you off chat there.
Yeah, no worries. So he becomes the armament minister, and up until 1942, the armaments minister was a guy named Fritz Todd. So we've already introduced him way back in the early episodes when we talked about the Autobahn. He was the guy building the Autobahn.
Yeah, okay, and he's just been sacked off for this dude.
It gets better than that. So, winter of 1941 into 1942, like, obviously, you know, the situation in the Soviet Union is bogged down, and Fritz Todd has a meeting with Hitler at Hitler's secret bunker in East Prussia. Would you like to have a guess what the name of Hitler's bunker is in English?
Hitler's Palace of Love.
It's actually lamer than that. It's the Wolf's Lair.
Ooh.
Hitler liked to be called Wolf, and he gave himself the nickname of Wolf.
Wow.
Yeah, because he is that fucking guy.
I'm really surprised I didn't know that. I feel like that's something I would have known. Blow me away with that. Was that just his close like buddies?
Yeah, he's like, oh, call me Wolf.
Call me Wolf. I might try that one. See how that gets me.
Wolfie.
Yeah. It's like calling yourself Scorpion, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's exactly like Scorpion. That. You can't give yourself a nickname, and if you're doing yourself a nickname, you can't call yourself Wolf.
Yeah, that's a bit weird.
Unless you were off the Gladiators in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Then it's okay.
Yeah.
So.
Come on, mate.
Fucking dweeb Hitler, man. So. Fritz Todd had come to Hitler for a specific reason, and basically he'd come to him to recommend that he seeks peace with the Soviets. Like, he's looked at the figures, he's run the numbers.
Fritz Todd said this?
Yes. This is why he wants the meeting. He's run the numbers, and it's like, we are not going to win this. And he's like, okay, we're going to inevitably lose, so we should seek peace now or in the strongest position as possible. So, he has the meeting with Hitler. And he's due to fly back on the 8th of February 1942. him and Speer were both supposed to go back to Berlin together, but Speer had stayed up late.
Was Speer there?
He's always around Hitler. Like, Hitler just likes having him there. He's kind of... He just likes talking to him and stuff. Anyway, Speer and Hitler had apparently stayed up late watching films and talking, and so Speer got up late and he missed the flight. So the plane takes off with Fritz Todt on board, and it explodes shortly after takeoff, and Fritz Todt is killed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. It's all making sense now.
You see where this is going. Speer claimed that he had seen a report saying, quote, "The possibility of sabotage is ruled out. Further measures are not required." Because that's how you conduct an air crash investigation.
Yeah, of course, yeah. With no resolution.
So, well, these things just happen sometimes.
It's fucking circus, this place is going. This Nazi party is fucking becoming a circus, I tell you. It was fine until now. I'm drawing the line now. It's become a circus. It's a fucking joke, ain't it? It's not the evilest joke you could possibly think of. Nazi party, Germany, World War II, isn't it? Worst joke you could possibly... When you know the facts of how it actually all unravelled.
It's proper, Death of Stalin sort of nonsense.
Great film, by the way. Yeah. Everyone should watch that. If you haven't watched The Death of Stalin, you need to watch it. If you haven't ever watched it and you're not willing to watch it, I'll ban you from listening to the podcast. You can fuck off. Go and watch it.
Yeah, great film. Endorse that.
Very funny. Specifically the character Zhukov.
Yeah.
Who even talks about him?
He's not going to come up a huge amount, but he's there in the background for us. Actually, he's going to come up a little bit in this episode.
Yeah, okay. All
right, so after this, completely unpredictable plane crash, Albert Speer becomes armament minister. Couldn't have seen that coming. Isn't it incredible? He just happened to be in the same room as Hitler after the previous guy died in a fireball.
In one that needed no more explanation.
Funny how those things work.
Yeah, it is a bit.
So anyway, so he makes him the armaments minister. And unlike Fritz Todt, he doesn't have a industrial background, is an architect. First thing that Speer does is go on a big PR campaign and a propaganda push. Basically, the guys who've been running the economy so far, so we've got Todt and we've got the Wehrmacht's professional supply logistics guys. And all of these people understood completely in 1942 the war was lost, and the only rational doctrine is seek the best peace we can get now.
So everyone's knowing this now.
Everyone who is in any way involved in the economics of Nazi Germany is no, we're fucked. We have lost. Okay. We're still deep in the Soviet Union, but we can see the writing on the wall. There's only one way this is going to end. Speer comes in, he has all of this information presented to him, and he goes, fuck it. What we're going to do is make lots of good advertising. So in the spring of 1942, they start making news films inside the factories. They show off the newest and the best German weapons. And this is the first time they've done this. German propaganda so far has been marching soldiers.
Trying to win the psychological war, ain't they?
Exactly. So now it's okay, maybe we're not winning, we don't see the big conquests and stuff and the cheering crowds, but we're going to show we have the latest and greatest stuff. Our best weapons are the best, and the best weapons will bring the victory.
That's still reflected now with the reputation of the Tiger tank.
Exactly. Exactly, 100%.
Which they are decent pieces of kit, definitely. But, as we know, they got weaknesses, and you can exploit that. And any good tanker would know those weaknesses and would exploit those weaknesses.
And in fact, I would even go the next step and say, in the later stages of the war, German tank design is getting into the propaganda needs come first.
Yeah.
Bigger and better. It's King Tigers and elephants and all of these things which have horrendous mechanical issues.
Yeah.
But they have great propaganda value.
Yeah, you look at a King Tiger tank, Like, you know the history of the Tiger tank. If you don't know the history, then look at a Tiger tank. It's an iconic German tank. Great big gun, loads of thick armour. Massive flaw in it. It's not, none of the armour's sloped.
Yeah.
It's like a King. Massive flaw. Huge flaw. You could see easily slope. There's plenty of space on that. Yeah, to slope them from that front ring. Plenty of space. Obviously, for those who don't understand the reason for sloping armour, in reality, is just the armour's turned, as an example, 45 degrees. If a projectile hits that at 45 degrees, the thickness of the armour is increased by the slope of the armour. Is that
the best exactly. way to describe it? The straight line thickness becomes greater because you've tilted it to the angle.
And you get deflection. So it makes massive, and they got this big flat band basically that runs around the whole side of the tank. If a tanker who knew what they was doing, obviously these guys who are running tanks, they're going to study the enemy vehicles, they're going to know what they're about, and they're going to know about that spot. That they, so that's what they aim for.
Mm.
Even though it's this big, heavy, you know, massive vehicle, really thick armour, aim for that spot, you've got them.
Yeah, and you get to like the later vehicles, like... the Elephant in its first deployment and the Old Ferdinand, like, they deployed off of railway cars onto a bank, and like half of the vehicles were lost burning out their own gearboxes trying to get up a hill. King Tigers, when they were used in the Battle of the Bulge, like, they literally couldn't break through the same area Germany had broke through in 1940 because the tanks are just so fucking big. They're like 60-70 ton tanks.
Well, King Tiger looks great, and it
looks cool as
it's
fuck.
It's very, you know, on paper it's a very impressive piece of equipment. But they, like at this point in the war, obviously Germany's not getting all the alloys in that they were getting. They have to start cheaping up on the material because the trade's not coming in at this point in the war. Obviously they've basically upset everyone, so no one's trading with them. So that was a big point actually on the engineering side of things. The late war German alloys were they were shit. Basically, that's the only way to describe them. Terrible. Terrible, terrible alloys, and they cut back on them. So, like, sprockets of things were made out of too light a material. So, they're just sheer, basically. Just sheer the material because it's too soft.
Right.
Like, they just had to cut back because the materials weren't available. So, you've got this massive heavy tank, and it's just breaking itself by work.
Yeah, it's like its own weight of it is like shredding the sprockets.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, you know, building a 60-70 ton tank, that's how much like a Challenger weighs today. You're trying to do that in 1940s technology.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be horrible to be inside one of them. It'd be well rickety a bit.
Yeah. But you can see, like, I am pretty certain that there's a straight line that can be drawn between the propaganda effort in 1942 focusing on this through to Germany ending up with these increasingly massive unusable tanks
ridiculous
in the late war.
Ridiculous tanks, yeah. It does make sense, to be fair. But so it's all over the fucking place, and then it basically logistical nightmare. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Because export, well, that wouldn't bother them, would it? Export being hammered. Ah. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, they don't stay anymore very long, do they? Do you not think it's mad that Germans' military keep making these really wise assessments of things, and then Hitler ignores them, and then it all goes to pit fucking wrong? I know, yeah, I was just thinking, yeah. But surely they're getting all the French coal. Yeah, good lads. Yeah. Yeah. Let add. Yes, they got fuck all to work with. Idiots. Oh, wow. Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. We did some damage, didn't we? We can talk about that, for we've been there. So is there no one where coal comes from within their little alliance then? Hungary, Romania. Yeah, okay. Logistical issues again. Big time. Okay. Yeah.